episode 181 of Fly Away, a weekly podcast from Outlander Travel about the thing we love most, travel. We're glad you're joining us this week. Our goal is to inform, educate, and inspire. We hope that tuning in for our weekly chats will help push you outside of your comfort zone and add some new experiences to your bucket list. We also welcome ideas for topics. So if there's something you'd like to hear more about, please let us know. My name is Laura, and this week I'm joined by fellow Outlander travel agents Sandy, Lindsay, Elizabeth, and Donna, and our special guests Peter Rogers and Kevin Haight. Kevin and Peter joined one of their closest friends and spent 3 weeks this past August on the trip of a lifetime, exploring Norway from many different vantage points. Norway is ranked as the second happiest country in the world on criteria such as freedom, honesty, welfare, good health, and generosity. Norway is a Scandinavian country, encompassing mountains, glaciers, and deep coastal fjords. Oslo, the capital, is a city of green spaces and museums. Bergen, with its colorful wooden houses, is the starting point for many cruises into beautiful fjords. Norway is also known for fishing, hiking, skiing, is a hub for outdoor activities, fresh fish, farm-to-table foods, warm and welcoming people, and some of the most beautiful scenery your eyes can behold. The fjords are said to be the soul of Norway, and that is, in fact, where Peter and Kevin's journey began. So let's get started. Welcome, you guys.
Yay!
Hi, how are you doing?
Hello.
We're so glad. So, why don't you guys kind of start at the beginning of your journey? You flew in from,
We started out in Chicago, and we flew from Chicago to London.
Okay.
And from London, we caught a direct flight from London up to Oslo. And that's where we started our vacation.
And did you spend a couple days in Oslo before the trip?
We spent 5 days in Oslo, just touring around and seeing everything that we could possibly see and checking out some of their great restaurants. We also had the fortune of actually knowing some locals when we went there, so that through family and friends. So we had some people to meet when we first arrived in Oslo, and they gave us some great pointers on what to go see and where to go and what to do. And they even joined us to go out and sit in the sunshine and enjoy a meal in the afternoon and a beer looking out over the water.
Awesome.
So would you recommend
excellent.
That?
Would I recommend Oslo? Absolutely.
Well, stay there a couple days maybe before your trip began.
Oh, it's definitely worth adding on either on the front end or the back end to a trip. It's well worth the time.
You guys are very well traveled. Where do you rate Oslo among some of the larger cities that you visited? Because is it a big city, or is it more like a San Francisco city with a small town feel, kind of?
Not quite San Francisco, but I mean, it's a small town.
It's a small modern city. It's very, very clean. You have to remember that Norway is a very small country population wise. So their major cities really feel like small cities. Mm-hmm. But that's part of the charm of it, is that these beautiful small cities with the most friendly, neighborly, willing to help you at every turn in the road people.
I have a question. Yeah. You guys went in August, is that right?
End of August.
So what is the weather like? Because I picture it kind of cold all year long.
In Oslo, it was chilly, but then we, on a beautiful sunshine day, you know, it was fine in just a light jacket.
Yeah. So just layer.
Yeah, you're going to get two different opinions because I'm really warm-natured. Kevin's very cold-natured.
Right.
So on the same day, he might be bundled up in a fleece jacket, and I'll be running around in a pair of shorts. So it was really the weather was mostly long pants. Mm-hmm. It was we were wearing – and you always had a jacket with you, you know, just in case because – some days it was warm, and then it would get cooled up. The local people told us that this had been the worst summer ever, and all it had done was rain.
Oh.
But we had a big beam of sunshine that followed us throughout Norway. So either the people of Norway are a bunch of liars, or we just had perfect timing.
Well, they do have a reputation for being very shady folk, don't they?
They're really nice, but they're shady.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about your time with Hurtigruten and the, why you chose it and what you liked about it.
Well, I think we chose it for the most part because my parents had gone on a Hurtigruten cruise, what was it, probably 15 years prior.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And my dad said that that was a bucket list thing, that he, there was no, and if we were going to Norway, we can't go without taking this cruise. So it was funny. We were so determined to do this. And when we met some of the younger people in Oslo, they were all kind of surprised that it was one of our key destinations, because it was something most people from Norway do once they retire. So why would younger people be choosing to do it? But so I think that's why we chose it.
Yeah, and that is true. And even though the majority of the people on the Hurtigruten cruise were older and mostly retired, there were still some people that were our age and even younger. And part of that has to do with the structure of the Hurtigruten cruise and how people kind of use it as a point-to-point transportation,
mm-hmm.
Not just a get on at Bergen, ride it all the way until the end. Some people choose to just get on and go for a day or go for, you know, the entire duration. And it just depends on what they're looking for.
Well, and this might be a good time to talk a little bit about, you know, a lot of times when we talk on our podcast about cruises, we're talking about more mainline cruises. So Hurtigruten's a little bit of a different ship, isn't it?
Well, it really is. It's a working ferry. It is the transportation ship for coastal Norway and for getting, you know, if you're trying to move your car, you're trying to move supplies, that ferry, instead of just stopping in a port and letting all the passengers off for a day like you might do in the Caribbean, this ferry is a working boat that may stop in a port for 15 minutes because all they're doing is letting off people, taking on people, and
supplying the food and supplies that little village only has access to from this ship.
So they deliver the mail too, don't they?
Pardon?
They deliver the mail as well, don't they?
Yeah, mm-hmm. It delivers the mail. It, depending how small, some of these little towns don't have roads to them or didn't have roads to them, but yeah. They deliver a lot of necessities.
And some of these small villages, in the wintertime, that would be their only means of getting things in and out of there, because in some of the really small northern areas, you know, once everything freezes up and it's dark 24 hours a day in the winter, the Hurtigruten's the only link to the outside world.
So
I mean, they do have airports and things like that, but you know, for parts of the year, it's the weather gets pretty rough, I hear. I've never been there.
So what are the accommodations like? Is it, because I knew that about the transportation and stuff, but I still kind of think it prices like a luxury kind of trip. Mm. So does it feel like that? I mean, are the accommodations nice?
Is the ship sort of segmented into here's the vacationers, here's the people just moving from port to port?
I've never been on another cruise ship, to be honest, so I don't have a whole lot to compare it to, but it seemed like 90% of the people, at least, because we started at the very top of Norway and came south down to Bergen. The trip, I think, typically goes Bergen all the way to the top and back, so we only did the one way.
And we only did part of the one way.
Yeah, you can go southbound or northbound.
Or you can do the entire round trip.
Yeah, right, right.
And that's what a lot of our fellow passengers were doing. And the reason why people do that is because, you know, as I said, they stop in all these little tiny towns, but their schedule is worked out so that they stop in a bunch of the tiny towns, half the tiny towns, basically, on the way up during the day. And half the tiny towns in the night. So they're pulling into ports in the middle of the night. And then on the return trip home, they stop in all the ports during the day that they stopped at nighttime on the outward journey.
So basically you see different ports going up.
Right. So people who are on for the whole cruise, they see entirely different ports, you know, going up as they do going down. Mm-hmm.
To answer your question about the cruise ship, I think it's different in one way is that there's not a lot of deck space. There's a lot of the ships are built with a lot of internal, like inside viewing with big panoramic windows, looking out over the scenery. And people just sit in those chairs that kind of recline and lean back so you can just see everything for hours and hours. They're, you know, a real commodity to get one of those chairs. When they get them, they stay in them. And you had to show up right after breakfast or you were not getting a panoramic seat.
Oh, wow. So did you guys did you have a balcony?
There were no balconies.
None of the rooms had balconies.
Yeah. Okay. And they would, you know, it was all about the sightseeing, and they would make announcements saying we're coming up on something here or in the next hour. And people would run outside, and the perimeter deck area would be filled with people and their cameras. And then everyone would shuffle back in and grab seats again. And
because there were times during our transit where it was raining, not that often. That was actually fairly rare. Okay. But when we came over the very northern tip of Norway, the weather was miserable. I mean, it was cold and windy, and the rain was coming down at about a 45-degree angle. So when we stopped, what was the name of the town we stopped in?
Everybody sign up!
But it was so spectacular. I mean, just this one port call begins with an H.
Hammerfest.
Hammerfest. The weather was absolutely miserable, which kept me from doing the hike I wanted to do, which would have taken me up on top of these bluffs to look out over all the scenery.
Oh, no, that was awful.
But it was that one time. I have, you know, a million pictures of amazing, beautiful scenery where it's not raining.
Right.
And so that just happened to be one day when we're on the very northern tip of Norway.
And Sandy, something you don't know is that all three guys were in the same room together.
Okay.
Yeah, that was tight.
Yeah. And they were only bunks that like flopped off the wall kind of thing.
Really?
Right,
okay.
Yeah.
So not luxury accommodations.
The other one and the other one.
Wow.
But we did see some other staterooms that were definitely much more luxurious than ours.
Okay.
Right.
You know, we were there to, you know, do the cruise and do it in, I guess, somewhat economical fashion. I mean, we could have gotten much more expensive accommodations, and they looked a whole lot more comfortable. But we weren't spending any time in our room anyways.
Right. Yeah, I guess that's what I'm thinking of when I think of how it prices, you know. Yeah. I know it's not, it's kind of an expedition type stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There just was a lot of space on the ship to sit around and, you know, play cards or
read books.
Exactly.
Or, you know, and so much of the time we're out there on the deck, you know, looking at the scenery. I mean, and they're so accommodating on that ship. We saw the Northern Lights one night.
Oh, nice.
And we went down to the quarter deck and we said, can you turn out the lights on the back portion of the ship? Because the Northern Lights are out. And they, you know, made an announcement, turned out all the lights on the back end of the ship so that anybody who wanted to could take advantage of seeing the Northern Lights just, you know, floating overhead. It was amazing.
Nice. That's awesome.
That was rare for that time of year.
Yeah,
I was going to say, I was going to ask that question. Go ahead.
You had said there was a day that the weather was just really nasty. Did you get all the winds with that and the tides and the currents, or was it just raining?
It was pretty much just raining. And really, if people are worried about being seasick, they don't really need to worry about that because there's so few parts during the journey that you are out on the open ocean exposed. Almost the entire journey is in fjords and protected waterways, you know, where you're protected by barrier islands. So the ship was just smooth as glass almost all the time.
Oh. No, it was. It was very nice.
So this is not a ship that's going to have formal nights. There is a drink package, but it's, I think it was like, if we bought the drink package for them, they could have had two beers a day or a bottle of wine with each meal.
Oh.
And that
would never suit James.
Yeah.
That might have been a good way to get a little bit more room in that cabin.
And Peter and James and Kevin chose to just buy one, purchase breakfast on the ship, as part of their package. And then am I remembering correctly, you guys?
We didn't do the full board,
right.
But we did eat in their restaurants more times, just a la carte.
Right, you just opted to. So there's like a main dining room, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Two floors or one?
It's very restaurant focused, food focused, like every cruise, I think, is. Mm-hmm. People are lined up, ready to go eat, and the food was
delicious.
Really good. If you've heard of New Nordic cuisine, it's kind of a. James is very interested in New Nordic cuisine and top chefs and things. And they have on the TV in the rooms, they've got this guy that has a popular show in Norway describing how he's created these menus for the ships. And they pick up regional and seasonal food only at these stops as the ship goes north and comes back south. And they create their menu specifically to tie in. Like the meal for that night ties into the region that you're in of Norway. It's impressive what they do.
Yeah, so if you're a foodie and you're looking for kind of, I don't know if you'd call it farm to table, but it's
like that, yeah.
It's sort of farm to table and I guess fishing net to table.
Fjord to table.
Fjord.
Yeah, it's fjord to table cuisine and it's really good.
It's a fjordable.
Not a fjordable. Pricey. In fact, they're famous on the very top. They're famous for their crab. What's it called?
King crab.
Their king crab, and to sit down to dinner a la carte to buy the king crab that night was as expensive as your whole meal package that you'd presented to us, Laura.
Oh wow!
So I mean, trying to do the math on that. It's like eating shark fin soup, I think. It's ridiculous.
But they also just pulled that king crab out of the fjord you've just been in.
Yeah.
But it was like massive and delicious, and we talked to people and said it's well worth it. So.
Wow.
Yeah, and it would probably feed a family of like eight.
Yeah. I didn't realize that the food wasn't automatically included. That's definitely something
that is
different.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But we did end up eating a lot more meals. you know, knowing, if we'd known beforehand, I think we probably would have purchased a more complete meal package. You know, maybe breakfast and dinner. But
the travel agent tried to tell you, but you were pretty right. sure of yourself.
We're going to throw James under the bus right now.
He's not here to
say that. He's traveling home.
So,
something that's a little different, too, is the excursions, right?
I would say there was an excursion at least one every day.
If not twice.
And they were neat. They were very, education focused. And they had a lot of experts in their field, that would do classes or
lectures.
Just lectures on the boat. And then they would be relevant or pertain to the, excursion of that day or something. They were neat. The one we did was horseback riding.
Oh, fun.
And this isn't a place that, because you've not been on a cruise before, you may not have understood my reference point to that. But Peter told me when you go on an excursion, the boat leaves. The excursion then takes you to the next fjord down, and you catch the boat again down there.
Right.
Cool.
Right. And if you don't catch the boat there, then you've got to go on to the next port, because this is a working ferry, and it keeps moving.
Wow. Did that happen to you guys?
So that was very interesting that, you know, people would get off the boat and they would disappear for the day, and then you'd pick them up, 6 hours, 8 hours later downstream, so to speak.
So did you do some of that? Did you, you know, spend the day off the ship and journey?
We did. We were only on the boat for 5 days, and we chose to do a horseback riding expedition in the Lofoten Islands, which are just spectacular, and I am just itching to go back and...
It was a neat part of the...
Plant myself on those islands and just hike around, walk around. But... one of the funniest things was Kevin here is 6'4", and Icelandic horses really weren't made for a 6'4" person.
I thought the Vikings were supposed to be a huge guy.
5'5" person.
Wow.
My feet didn't drag. Boulders. He literally didn't have to put his foot in the stirrup to get up over the top of his horse. He walked up behind it and just sort of did a vault on it.
That's fantastic. So I want to go back to food really quickly, because I'm dying to know. You must have had reindeer. You must have. Did you?
Yeah. I don't know that we had
really?
Reindeer.
I think we might have had... I think we might have had reindeer sausage at one point.
I think that when we were in Australia, we tried kangaroo, and that was such a horrible experiment that I thought, no way, I'm not doing it.
Kangaroo are very different from reindeer.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Reindeer is so delicious.
It is?
Now you have to go back and try it.
I've had it in Finland, and it was just fine, but... nobody seemed really motivated to go eat reindeer during this trip. In fact, they did have on the menu at the fine dining restaurant on the ship, they had a reindeer steak.
Yeah.
But you didn't choose to have it.
But we had fish. And the fish was so fresh and so delicious.
So that the option is you can pay for your dinner, which is in the dining room. But there's like, the dining room has like two choices. Like, that's what they're cooking that night. That's what you're eating.
Yeah. They had a prefix basically with a couple choices on it. But that's how it was for dinners. And then breakfast was the buffet. It was the only time there was a buffet, right?
Lunch, yeah. I think, was the buffet too, wasn't there?
Yeah, lunch was a buffet, but we didn't eat.
We didn't do lunch, I don't think.
Yeah.
We didn't eat lunch. We went. They had a little cafe, like a little bistro.
Actually, several cafes.
Yeah, and so we went to that. And as I understand it, there are a couple of the newer ships that are even bigger that
you know, are even more luxurious and, you know, more restaurants. And
you guys are on the Polaris, right?
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so there are, if people choose to buy the regular package and they don't want what they're serving, there are a couple of other options on the boat, right?
Yeah, there sure are. Yeah.
Like king crab legs.
Yeah. Yeah, like king crab. Or peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
So actually, now that you say that, were there any children on this at all?
So not very many, like me, young children.
Yeah, like under 16.
No young children at all on our ship. I don't know if it would be appropriate for young kids, just from the standpoint that there wouldn't be the entertainment activities mm-hmm. that little kids are looking for. Because, you know, when you see the commercials for a Carnival Cruise Lines, mm-hmm. Caribbean, you know, cruise, you know, they've got surfing waves and water parks and all that. And these ships are not that.
Mm-hmm. So it has to be the kind of kid who was content with playing cards with somebody or reading or, you know, being on an iPad or...
Yeah.
Doing excursions. An older kid, probably.
It sounds sort of like the...
Yeah, or a young kid that just was really able to, you know, focus on, you know, enjoying seeing and doing all these things as opposed to wanting to be entertained 24 hours a day.
So, you know, you said that Kevin's parents said that being at Arctic Group was... Because I want to talk about the rest of your trip, and I know we're starting to get close here. But so it was a bucket list item. If you were going back to 3 weeks again, would you choose to see part of it by boat?
Absolutely, yeah.
And why?
Because there are places that you can get to on those boats that you will never see in a car or on an airplane or on foot. There are places that, just as an example, we went up to Geiranger Fjord, and this was after we'd gotten off the Hurtigruten, but we hopped there. The really kind of the only way to get there is by ferry, unless you really want to torture yourself with hours and hours of driving. And this ferry boat, goes right up the center of this massive fjord that comes in off the ocean. And it goes for, what is it, like 60 miles inland?
Wow.
I mean, and it just keeps going and going. And you're talking 3,000, 4,000 foot vertical walls.
Wow.
And every once in a while you see a little farmhouse perched halfway up the cliff. With a little tiny meadow where they like raise their cattle. And you can't see that unless you're down there on that boat. You know, and these waterfalls just cascading off the walls of the fjord. It was so incredibly impressive.
When we were talking, you said something like, we'd pull into a fjord and I'd say to Kevin, this is the most beautiful place I've ever been. And then we pull into another fjord and it's like, oh, this is the most beautiful place I've ever
been. Yeah, it was like that. Absolutely.
Yeah, and all three of us came away from the vacation saying, you know, oh, if only we hadn't, you know, had lodging the next night in the next town. And we scheduled ourselves when we were doing our driving portion to have short days of driving, no more than like 4 hours of driving. And it took all day to do those 4 hours because you had to stop everywhere.
Wow.
And every time we left a town, we were looking at each other going, can't we stay another day?
Or, yeah, we're coming back to that place for a week.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I want to just come here and sit down for a week and walk around town and eat in the restaurants and hike in the mountains. And it's just too amazing.
Now, speaking of hiking, you guys did do one pretty massive hike, didn't you?
Some would call it epic.
Well,
it was a hike that tries men's souls.
Well, we're glad you're here with us today, then.
More specific about that, because
you see that,
that might be less.
It would try women's
souls. Peter is laughing, and Kevin is not having much.
Yeah. We did a lot of reading up on this, and the internet is definitely out there to scare you about this hike. Yeah. But it was challenging.
It was. There were tales of terror on the internet about,
yeah,
you know, how this could possibly ruin your life, ruin your marriage. You know, you might fall to your untimely demise.
Wow.
Let's go back and talk about the hike we're talking about. Start there.
Yeah, I want to do this.
Yeah, it's the Troll Tongue, they call it. It's the Troll's Tongue. Mm-hmm. And it's, what is it? It's an 8-hour hike, 4 hours in, 4 hours back. And at the, you know, all the way in, you get basically to the very top looking out over, is it a fjord or a lake?
It's a lake.
It's a lake. It's like an elevated lake. And this big rock juts out 30 feet over it, and it looks like a tongue, and it's thin, wow, and it could break off at any second while you're standing on it.
Yeah, and
I was terrified.
I can tell.
The original descriptions of the hike said you need to set aside 12 hours to do this hike, and they are not kidding. It is grueling, because the original hike is the first thing you do is you start by going, what was it, 4,000 feet up?
Yeah, hiking.
From the lakeside, going 4,000 feet straight up the side of a mountain.
Oh.
And then you get to the top, and now you have to walk 6 miles, 5 miles?
I forget.
Yeah, like 5 miles along the top of this ridgeline just to get to this tongue of granite that sticks out over the valley. And no kidding, when you go out onto this tongue of granite, it's a 1,000-foot drop-off.
Wow.
And you might bounce a couple times until you landed in the lake below.
That's
but
so
it is
fun.
It is a view that you cannot find anywhere else.
What time in the morning did you start your hike?
Well, that's where we found, thank God, we found some last-minute insider information, so to speak, on the internet, that said that in the last, just, it was like in that January or like June, they had opened up a road that goes to the top. So you were able to, if you were in the first 100 cars.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the first 100 cars, you could drive up that first 4,000 feet to an upper parking lot. But once that parking lot's full, everybody else has to start from the bottom.
And to answer your question, it was a 4 a.m. wake-up call. We got to the trailhead at 5, and we got a spot.
So and you didn't have to do
were you the first ones there?
No.
No, we weren't. But we were also...
Yeah, we were like 20, I don't know, 30th or something.
Yeah, we were...
Like part 99, right?
99.
And yeah, so we were within, you know, easily the first 30 people heading out on the hike. And we got up there, and you know, you had to pay extra to drive to the upper parking lot, and it was worth every single cent. And they could have charged me double, and I would have paid that too.
Yeah.
So you made it sound like, the first part is the hard part, you know, that incline, and then it's just like a 6 mile stroll. Is it? So this was the
not
second
a 6 mile
part.
Stroll.
No, it's a 6 mile stroll up and down small mountains, basically.
Okay.
And you know, so it's not like you're suddenly just on this
like
flat mesa.
Yeah. Okay.
It's still up and down.
Yeah.
And even when you leave that parking lot, the first thing you do is hike 1,500 feet uphill.
Yeah.
Wow.
Which includes just sheer rock face too, not like straight up, but I mean you have to follow little, what are they called, cairns?
Yeah, you're following cairns, little piles of stone.
Wow.
That mark the trail, and you're hiking up this, and it is also below freezing.
Mm. Yeah.
So we're hiking up this, and it's below freezing, and it's dark, and we're using headlamps. And then the sun starts coming up over the top of the mountains. Those pictures are spectacular, with the sun just starting to rise and color returning to the world. And then literally an hour later, you're like pulling off layer after layer of insulation as it gets warmer and warmer.
What time did you get back to your car?
We really took our time to soak it in on the way back. On the way there, we weren't sure what we were facing, so we kind of were really trying to beat the time.
The drill sergeant was out and ready to go.
So on the way back, we kind of, we took maybe like 4.5-5 hours. I don't know. We got back, what time? 4 o'clock?
Probably 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon.
So you
and then we drove to Bergen that afternoon, but
Pete had his drone.
Oh.
He was flying up on the troll tongue too, so he was taking pictures of people while they're out there on it.
Oh wow!
Yeah, and we took, you know, we carried our lunch with us, and we stayed out there at the troll's tongue for an hour and a half.
Yeah,
2 hours. The great thing about getting there when we did was that it was a 15-minute queue to get out on the troll's tongue to get your picture taken.
You wait your turn, and you get your own, you know, solo shot out on the tongue.
And by the time we left, it was easily an hour wait.
Wow.
The line was that long. I've got pictures of it. It was incredible how many people had, you know, because it was a beautiful summer day, mm-hmm. crystal clear, not a cloud in the sky.
And hiking in, you know, you pass all these signs that say, you know, if you're here and it's 1 o'clock, turn around.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to make it to the tongue and back to your car before dark. And then it's dangerous. So.
Did you feel that it was a pretty international hike, or was it mostly Norwegians? Was it mostly local people who were, you know, finally doing this hike, or was it a pretty mixed group?
Totally international.
Yeah.
I mean, there were some Norwegians, but. We met this young lady from Germany who's living in England.
To me, it seemed very young.
Mm-hmm.
Like these were college kids or just out of college doing their backpacking trip around Europe type thing.
Couple people hiking with their dogs.
Wow.
And then there were old men like me.
Peter jokes about that, but you know, Kevin is an avid basketball player. They both ski and snowboard.
Yeah.
And Peter, when he, you know, flies into a city, will just take off on a 12-mile hike like it's nothing. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
You see this?
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I do.
Our audience can't see it. Our
snowboarding.
I know. This is dangerous from snowboarding.
Yes.
Uh-oh.
So this makes me think of, have you guys ever been to Yosemite? Because this is making me think of the Half Dome hike. Have you ever
I haven't been to Yosemite in like over 10 years.
Did you hike Half Dome? Did you ever do that?
I did not hike Half Dome, but I went backcountry backpacking across the valley from Half Dome.
Yeah, it's like I remember when we went, I didn't do it because it was like at least an 8-hour hike. And the thing that stopped me was the picture of people ascending at the very end where they put the railings up and stuff. Like they only do it seasonally and now you have to get a permit to do it. But the picture was so many people on this little line going straight up the sheer face of the rock. And I'm like, one person falls. Everyone's tumbling down. Yeah. So
they'll take them all with them.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I was just so afraid I would do that whole hike and then get there and would not go up that last part, you know? And well, I'd be so mad.
And I imagine there are horror stories from that tongue of people falling or jumping, I imagine.
No, actually there aren't.
Really?
Not at all. There have been very few accidents there. And they actually have a monitoring station where basically surveying equipment with lasers is monitoring the troll's tongue 24 hours a day to detect any seismic or, you know, geologic movement that could signal that it's getting ready to break off.
Oh, wow.
Well, he did say it was the happiest place in the earth, so, you know, they're probably not jumping.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's true. You live in Norway. Why would you jump?
That's true. A lot of easier places to jump from if you really wanted to.
You know, when you go to the Cliffs of Moher, that's all they tell you is that not only about people jumping, but people getting blown off the, the sheer face of the...
it's so windy up there.
Yeah, it's just really, really windy, so... Yeah.
We heard it was more people just not wanting... Still prepared for the hike, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and then getting out to the tongue and not wanting to hike home, so they just
and people having to be rescued for exposure.
Yeah. And they came up there and they said, "We're not rescuing you. You're just gonna have to walk. We'll walk backwards.
Wow.
We're not
flying
you out of here.
Yeah, they won't helicopter you out. They won't carry you out. You have to walk.
So they basically cattle prod you back."
I know that we're coming to the end of our time, and that this kind of may be jumping to another subject, but when we were talking, you talked some about how that the food in Norway was delicious, but then you were also impressed about how in tune they were with food allergies, and I thought you might want to talk about that a little bit.
Well, yeah, every menu in every restaurant noted what possible allergens each dish, could carry with it. So if, if you had a gluten intolerance or you're allergic to, nuts or whatever, it was listed on the menu as to, possible allergens you could face so that people could make, informed choices without having to worry.
That's fantastic.
And that's often, folks with food allergies, that's often, especially if they're going to be in a foreign country and they don't, they don't know what they're eating, that was a real bonus to people who, might be listening to our show who might be concerned about that. So what was your favorite city? What was your favorite place to go?
Oh, Kevin? I guess I'd probably say Bergen. I thought Bergen was such a neat town. It's a harbor town. It felt very small and walkable. Charming. The food was good. It was fun.
You guys went to a sculpture garden or something, didn't you?
We had some amazing weather.
Yeah, that was in Oslo.
That was in Oslo, okay.
Yeah. I guess
our friends in Oslo would be like, what? How could you choose Bergen? But Bergen just was a neat place.
But they also all went to university over in
They Bergen. Also all spent significant time in Bergen.
Yeah, and so they spent a lot of the time there. And also, Bergen is known for being rainier. But like I said, the entire time we were in Bergen, we just had incredible sunsets, incredible, beautiful blue days. And I think we had 15 minutes of rain the entire time we were in Bergen?
Yeah.
Maybe.
It was warm, it was sunny, and people were just throwing themselves into the water. This is the first time they'd had it all summer.
Wow.
They were so, it was like the happiest place on earth.
Yeah. And, one other thing, if people are thinking about going to Norway and they're, concerned about a language barrier, that is absolutely the last thing in the world they should be worried about. Everyone in Norway, from the time they're children, learn to speak English, and they speak better English than most Americans do.
Nice.
Yeah. We had multiple times where a server would come up to the table and start speaking Norwegian, and we would just have this look of...
oh no.
And they would stop and apologize. Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. That was so dumb of me to just start speaking Norwegian to you.
In Norway.
English back,
They were speaking their own language.
Because they're so good with their English, and they know that
that people don't speak Norwegian.
And that in the tourist business.
Nice.
Well,
they were just awesome.
If you're like me, Norway's on your list now and moving towards the top of it.
Absolutely.
That's our show for this week. We welcome your comments and feedback on this episode or any episode, really. To leave comments, please visit us at outlandertravel.com. Then click podcast at the top of the page and find the episode you wish to comment on. Or like us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/outlanderpodcast. Or just search for Fly Away. And please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes. On behalf of our special guests, Peter and Kevin, Lindsay, Elizabeth, Sandy, Donna, and myself, Laura. Thank you for joining us here at Outlander Travel. And we'll see you next week. Gotta fly!